Okay, I'm just waiting to set up the 1 second. Okay, we have another one. I'll just go back to the camera. It's okay. Sorry, we're fine.
Okay.
I guess before we begin, it's always a pleasure to be back to continue some of the, yes, we can call them almost the monthly women's shiurim in our Torah. Give or take a month or so, we last got together. Again, as we've begun all the shiurim, and at least during this difficult tkufa, we begin by continuing our tefillos together. Particularly at this time, we continue to daven for Chas Wingen's father, Yosef David Ben Miriam. We just hope and pray to hear B'sorah Tovos for him and for all of Chol Am Beis Yisrael. I want to spend a little bit of time this evening talking about, on the one hand, the intricacies of the unique halachic situation that arises this week. It's unique in the sense that it doesn't happen all the time, but it's not that unique because it really just happened a couple of weeks ago, and that is when you have a yontif going into a Shabbos. But it is probably one of the most confusing halachic transitions that exist, and we're all familiar. We may all remember is those scenes in the kitchen of children's being put on and candles being lit and all kind of strange things as it's still Yom Tov. From the one hand, it's Yom Tov and it's about to become Shabbos, and certain things that you are permitted to do on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, that you're not permitted to do you're not permitted to do on Shabbos, so it adds for definite confusion. So I thought we'd try to spend a little bit of time just reviewing some of the general halachas governing this particular time frame, and not just to talk about the specifics of what you can and can't do, but almost to give a little bit of a background. And very often in halacha, when we understand the whys, what this is all based on, so we have a much better possibility of being able to plug in the watts correctly as well. So we'll try to get a little bit of a, in a certain sense, the lumbus, the svaros, the reasoning and logic behind what we're doing, and then to apply it practically to Maisa, and then hopefully have a few moments at the end to really tie things all together and give us a little bit of an extra boost in terms of machshava, in terms of the Kras Kabbalah Satorah. So we have quite a schedule in a fairly short amount of time. We'll try to see how much we can get accomplished this evening. So we begin, like many, many other topics in halacha begin, with the Poskim Chumash. It's important for us to always remember that what we are doing in our own houses and doing in our own shuls and doing in our own backyards, is there is a definite halachic progression that the practices that we have are not just in a vacuum, but there is a very real halachic transmission door to door from the Psukim through the Mishnayos, through the Gemaras, through the Rishon, through the Shulchan Aruch, through the modern day practical application of halacha. So we're going to begin the sugya of what's going on in our own kitchens with the Poskim Chumash. Poskim Chumash, and those who are following along with the sources, it's the first of the sources. Uvayom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh, Uvayom HaShvi Mikra Kodesh Yalochem. This Poskim is talking specifically about Pesach, but truth to be told, all of the halachas that govern Melacha, the prohibited activities in Yom Tov, are identical for all the Yom Tovim. So the Torah here singles out Pesach. The first day of Pesach is a holy day, and the seventh day is a holy day. Kol Melacha Lo Ye'aseh Bohem. You are not permitted to do Melacha on these days. However, what you are permitted to do on Yom Tov, anything that falls into the category of what is called Ochel Nefesh, food-related activities. Now that's a loaded statement. What is food activities? What are not food activities? Cooking, baking clearly are. Arranging fires, maneuvering fires, generally speaking are, but there may be certain limitations to that as well. Carrying, for the most part, even when there's no air, is food-oriented, but there may be certain limitations to that as well. So again, this is not the time for all the details of Mechuz Yom Tov right now, but the basic model that the Torah is telling us, those who are listening in Bergenfield, so we are truly fulfilling the pasuk of Kolos Ubrakim as the Memorial Day fireworks are getting underway. So we should just... enjoy the fact that Baruch Hashem, we have all the special effects in the background, and hopefully they won't be too disturbing for this particular shiur. So the Torah tells us that one is not permitted to do Melacha on Yom Tov, but one is perfectly permissible to do what's called Ochel Nefesh. And this, of course, is what creates almost the tension and sometimes even the stress of Yom Tov going into Shabbos, because on the one hand, we are permitted to still do certain things because it's technically not Shabbos yet. On the other hand, Shabbos is right around the corner, and there are going to be things that we're not allowed to do. We have to make that transition. In case we haven't learned this lesson in life, there's no question that transitions are always stressful, and therefore the Yom Tov Shabbos transition is somewhat stressful in halacha also. We're going to try to hopefully navigate it properly. So the basic rules are Shabbos, all 39 halachas are prohibited. Yom Tov, there are a few things that are permissible. But now we run into the situation where you have a Yom Tov going to Shabbos. To make matters more complicated, how in the world are you going to have food for Shabbos? Now, truth to be told, in today's world, it is not as challenging, simply because we are blessed to have refrigeration. In the olden days, so not all that long ago, it was absolutely impossible to have Shabbos food unless that food was cooked immediately before Shabbos began. You, especially if you have a what we call colloquially a three-day Yom Tov, imagine in an era before refrigeration, cooking all your Shabbos food on Wednesday and having it all spoiled by the time Shabbos comes along. So therefore, the halacha has to, we have to, in a sense, determine how can we possibly cook on Friday to enable us to eat on Shabbos. Now, you may be wondering, well, isn't cooking permissible on Yom Tov? The answer is yes and no. It is permissible to cook on Yom Tov for that day. It is prohibited to cook on Yom Tov for the following day. Whether the following day is a weekday, the following day is a second day Yom Tov, the following day is even Shabbos. And therefore, we are really, truly in a bind, because we cannot go hungry on Shabbos. That's not an option. On the other hand, there is no real way to prepare the food from Friday to Shabbos. And this is where the institution of Erev Tavshilin begins to enter into the halachic scene. And that is the second of the sources. The Rambam in Hilchas Yom Tov is basically summarizing the first two or three dafim in the second bracha of Maseches Beitza, where Chazal elaborate upon the institution of Erev Tavshilin. So the Rambam tells us, Yom Tov Shechal Dios Erev Shabbos. When Yom Tov falls out on a Friday, Ein Ofel Mevashel Yom Tov Ma'ashim Ochel L'mocha B'Shabbos. However, one is not permitted to cook just directly for a Shabbos. The Issa Zemi Divrei Sofrim. The reason why one is not permitted to cook on Friday for Shabbos is Midirabbanan. The reason being, Kidei Shelo Yovel Levashel Yom Tov L'chol. Because we are concerned that if you cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, next thing you know is you're going to be cooking for weekdays as well. And that would be a big, big problem. So therefore, Midirabbanan, Rambam's view is Midirabbanan, one is not permitted to cook from Friday to Shabbos. Shekal v'chomu, the Shabbos, and levash koshken l'chol. Therefore, people will get out of that mistaken habit of cooking for after Yom Tov. However, the Rambam tells us, where there is a way out, there is a solution to this dilemma, and that is, If I don't literally cook from Friday to Shabbos, what I simply do is I finish my pre-Yom Tov preparations. And this is critical, that as long as I started the cooking process from before Yom Tov, I can put on the quote-unquote final touches on Yom Tov itself. And that will enable me to cook for Shabbos. So the starting point is you're not permitted to cook on Friday for Shabbos, but you're allowed to complete the job. You're allowed to put the final touches on food that was already started from beforehand. What does that mean? So therefore, Achachamim instituted the following remedy to this problem, the Fikach, the third lines of the sources. Im asa tafshil me'erev Yom Tov. As long as a person began the cooking process, and the beginning of the cooking process is very, very little required. You made simply one cooked dish from before Yom Tov. She is so mechalav umavashel the ofer beyond the Shabbos. As long as I started, I cooked my egg on Erev Yom Tov. I cooked a little bit of my gefilte fish on Erev Yom Tov. I cooked a little bit of my chicken on Erev Yom Tov. If I want to finish, that's okay. Now, finishing here doesn't only mean I can finish that particular food. I can literally finish all of my preparations on behalf of Shabbos. And that's exactly what we're going to do when we make an Erev Tavshilin. So we're going to start the process, start this week, we're going to start the ball rolling on Thursday, and then on Friday we're going to finish up the touches. Now, it's a little bit of an extension of touches, because if you think about it, I simply prepared a hard-boiled egg on Thursday, and now I'm going to cook a shulam for 20 people on Friday. That's okay, because I'm not starting my bishul process, I'm simply completing it. And again, since the Rambam told us that this is a prohibition mid the Rabbanon, therefore, the Chachamim were able to, in a sense, lift this prohibition as long as one goes down the route of Erev Tavshilin. So the bottom line is that the starting point is one is not allowed to cook on Friday for Shabbos, but if one started before, one's able to. And the Tavshil Shesomich Lavonik Erev Tavshilin. That's exactly what an Erev Tavshilin is all about. Now, some of you may have noticed, if you're reading this Rambam carefully, that the Rambam didn't say a word about a challah roll. There was no matzah challah roll in the Rambam's equation. The Rambam talked about the Tavshil Kodesh. You have to wait for a moment till we figure out where in the world this challah roll entered into the scene. So our starting point is, can I cook Friday to Shabbos? But our solution is Erev Tavshilin. So there are a few things we have to analyze about the solution. We have to make sure that we are applying the solution properly. And this gets a little bit tricky. So if you take a look at the third of the sources, there's a comment by the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah writes the following care one has to take. For Kosvu Acharonim, to be Yomdiv Shechalios Be'er Shabbos, when Yomdiv falls out on a Friday, Yizor L'Haktim HaKonas Malchov L'Shabbos. One has to be extra special careful to make sure that all the food is ready and complete and literally edible, b'chdei sheyigmar melachto b'od yom, so that b'od yom gadol. I'm sorry, that one has to complete the food preparations before it gets dark. Somoch b'chashecha, b'zman shloi shayach shetzach lo b'yom d'gufa. Alo yesh kan losa de melacha d'yaraisa. Says the Mishnah Berurah that if a person puts up food late in the afternoon this Friday, and the food is not edible before Shabbos begins, that is a very, very serious problem. Why is that a serious problem? So let's take a step back. We said that, technically speaking, min haTorah, you're permitted to cook from Friday to Shabbos. Why is that so? So the Gemara explains one of the reasons is that when you cook from Friday to Shabbos, you're not really necessarily cooking from Friday to Shabbos. There's always that possibility that guests may come on Friday and somebody may come and eat some of that food on Friday. It is that assessment of Chazal that all Friday cooking is almost always viewed as Yom Tov cooking, since the possibility of guests exist. Therefore, the halacha dictates that min haTorah it is permissible. It is still something we do not want to do mid the Rabbanan, and Erev Tavshilin will solve that problem mid the Rabbanan. However, if the food is not ready for consumption before Shabbos, then the basic heter, the basic permissibility of feeding to the guests has been pulled out from under us because the guests are not eating raw food. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, if a person puts up a chulin very, very late in the afternoon this Friday, that is a very, very serious problem. So one has to be careful to start all food preparations early enough so that the guests theoretically could come. There was a fascinating shadow. We spoke a little bit about this mentio last night. There's a fascinating shalat that was raised this past Pesach, and to a certain extent the Shavuos as well. It was a fascinating shalat that was raised whether we have a right to rely on Erev Tavshilin in the middle of the a COVID crisis, because the entire heter of Erev Tavshilin is predicated on the assumption that you may feed the guests the food. Nobody is coming to visit us, so let's say for sure on Pesach, nobody was coming in to pick up a piece of chicken late in the afternoon on Friday from a stranger's house. And therefore, the entire kula of Erev Tavshilin may have been pulled out from under us. At the time, the Rabbanim were presented with that shaila is a very, very real question. And I think that the correct answer to that question was that even though it's true that we weren't having guests, but for better or for worse, people were eating a little bit more. And therefore, since people were home, nobody was going out to shul, nobody was going out to learn, nobody was going out for the most part out of the house. So the odds of we ourselves being our biggest guests was even more real, and therefore all cooking that was done on Friday can almost be considered to be Friday cooking, even without the real potential of guests. So again, interesting, a quirk of halacha, how it plays out today. But getting back to our story, it is therefore strongly recommended that preparation should be done in enough time to avoid any of these complications. We mentioned that Erev Tavshilin is based on the idea that the cooking is beginning from before Yom Tov and almost finishing into on Yom Tov itself. What exactly do we mean when we talk about the cooking? So this was a big question in the Gemara with earlier authorities, the Rishonim. Do we have to prepare just a symbolic cook dish, or is it necessary for us to prepare a symbolic cook dish as well as a symbolic bake dish? if we plan on baking on Yom Tov, many of us like to bake challahs, bake cookies and cakes. So can we say, well, I started the baking process by simply putting aside a hard-boiled egg? Or should we say each process on its own? So this was a major dispute in the days of the Rishonim. How do you make an Erev Tavshilin? Must an Erev Tavshilin be just merely a cooked dish? And once you have a cooked dish, everything goes? What do I say now? That an Erev Tavshilin requires dish per process. You want to cook, then set an egg. You want to bake, then set a challah roll as well. What is our practice? I think we're all familiar with the standard practice in the Jewish people is today to be machmer on this question, and we actually put aside both. There's a fascinating historical background to how this became our practice. It actually began in the days of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was one of the Balei Tosfos. He was one of the grandsons of Rashi. And Rabbeinu Tam's opinion was, based on his reading of the conclusion of the Gemara, that he was of the opinion that you have to put aside a cooked dish and a baked dish. His very own nephew, Rabbeinu Yitzchok Dari, who was Rabbeinu Tam's sister's son, who grew up in the house of his uncle. And Dari, as a young man, disagreed with his uncle on this very question. And he thought that the conclusion of the Gemara was the opposite, that a cooked dish is sufficient and there's no need to put aside a baked dish. And Tosis quotes this running argument between uncle and nephew, all the proofs back and forth and back and forth. Do you need an egg or is it necessary to have a challah as well? And front of the end, you see almost like the human side, so to speak, of the Balei Tosfos. You see the beauty, the little bit of a touching story. At the end of the Tosfos, so the rewrites, even though I disagree with my uncle, Lomla'ani libi la'avor al divrei dodi. I didn't have the heart to overturn my uncle the halacha, and therefore the rewrites, I grew up in my uncle's house, and I observed many, many Yom Tov in his house, and I think his conclusion of the Gemara was not correct, but out of deference to my uncle, so I also used to put aside a challah roll in addition to the egg, and that practice has stuck through till this very day. So it was the love and mutual affection between uncle and nephew, at the time of the Ri, who was so close to those who are familiar with the makings, the workings of Balei Tosfos. So most of the Balei Tosfos that we have today were Tamidim, with the students of Rabbeinu Tam of the Ri. Pretty much a major portion of Torah Shabbat Peh that has come down to us in the last 800 years came through the eyes, through that uncle-nephew, who were the two of the major players in terms of the Balei Tosfos. And that human dimension, that uncle and nephew celebrated Yom Tov together, met Eruv Tavshilin together, and that is stuck. So in Bergenfield, in Tavshin Peh, we're still doing what was done back in the days of the Crusades, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, and we still observe this custom, this practice of having challahs plus eggs as well. However, if for whatever reason the challah roll disappeared before Shabbos began, that is much less of a problem. If your egg or gefilte fish or chicken, whatever the piece may be, if it literally disappeared, that's a huge problem. We have to speak to the rabbi about that. But if the challah roll disappeared, so that is not so terrible because, strictly speaking, according to most opinions, you don't even need the challah roll in the first place. So we're following the custom of having it, but if it got eaten by some kid along the way, don't worry about it. Those who are in Ohav Torah, I know we have a few guests. We welcome anyone who's joining us in the shurim these days. Baruch Hashem, one of the beautiful, advantages, so to speak, of shurim over Zoom is that we're no longer limited to our immediate community. So we're so happy to have anyone who's coming and joining. But those with our Torah family will probably appreciate the nuances of the story a little bit more. That this is one of the deep, dark, secret mysteries of our Torah. Someday, when somebody decides to write the history of the shul, so maybe they'll tell us over as well, that several years ago we had an Erev Tavshilin that we set up, and I set it in the back of the shul kitchen with a challah roll and a piece of gefilte fish. The gefilte fish was in the refrigerator, and the challah roll was left on top of the refrigerator. And came Yom Tov morning, and the challah roll was gone. And when the challah roll was gone, so if not for the fact that we don't really accept Rabbeinu Tam, that could have potentially been a serious problem for the Sobolovsky family in terms of cooking and doing anything from Yom Tov to Shabbos. So I was just kind of scrounging around to try to figure out who ate the challah roll. Nobody came forward with that information. So it could be that some child who is now well over bar mitzvah may be in the challah roll. But whatever the case may be, we never solved the mystery of the challah roll, but it did make a couple of good shiurim. So it gave me the opportunity to tell everybody about Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, but after shiurim, I get eaten by mistake, etc. So we made an ongoing joke about that missing challah roll. Baruch Hashem, we've done many, many b'dikas chometzes since then, and it's still not shown up. So I'm assuming that it was in fact eaten. Back to our story. So we understand that we have to make our Shabbos preparations in enough time. We understand that the Erev Tefillin is supposed to be challah and filter fish, egg, chicken, whatever the case may be. In addition to the general Erev Tefillin that each one of you as a family unit is going to make, there is one made by the Rav of every community, and that is for the people who may forget. The person forgot to make an Erev Tefillin, so the rabbi makes one on their behalf. But the rabbi cannot just simply hocus pocus make one on others' behalf. One has to actually own a share in the Erev Tefillin. And therefore, every Rav does this on behalf of his community, that before he makes his personal Erev Tefillin, as part of his personal Erev Tefillin, he takes his challah and his egg or his fish, etc., finds a neighbor. It's really preferable to do it with somebody not in your immediate family. Finds a neighbor and hands it to them, and they pick it up on behalf of everyone in the community. And therefore, if a person forgot, they can rely on that Erev Tefillin. The Gemara tells us that it's one strike and you're out. You're only allowed to forget once. If you start to forget multiple times, so then there's a question whether you can even rely on the rabbi. So if you forgot more than once, please don't do that. Again, if you have a question, please consult your rabbi. It's interesting because that practice of asking somebody to pick up the Erev Tefillin, many of my immediate neighbors, I suspect that probably some of them are on the Zoom call right now, some of my immediate neighbors, so have had the special opportunity to be that Zocha, or very often Zocha, Zocha, depending on your dictum. Bottom line is whichever door I knock on first, and whichever person answers the door, Ovar Bar Bas Mitzvah, has had that opportunity to be Zocha on the Erev Tefillin for the community. Of course, we ran into a unique situation this past Pesach, when I wanted to be knock at someone's door and be Zocha on the Erev Tefillin, but it was a time when people generally were not so excited about having people knocking the doors and people coming in. So what I did with one of the neighbors on the block was I called them before we arranged. They came outside, and I put the Erev Tefillin down on the floor. It was in a bag, don't worry. The piece of filter was in a plastic bag, and the matzah was wrapped up in aluminum foil or a baggie. I forgot already. And I put it down on the floor. I stepped back my social distancing, and the other person came by and picked up the Erev Tefillin on behalf of the community. I suspect we may have to repeat that process on this coming Thursday as well. It had to be done just parenthetically for the Erev Chatzeiros of the community as well. That's something that usually doesn't affect in the sense of most people don't have to do that. That's something that the Rabbanim do. So there are multiple Erev Chatzeiros depending on the different nuances of the Erev per se. There is one Erev Chatzeiros that unites all the Bergen count. It happens to be sitting on top of the refrigerator in our shul. So that Erev Chatzeiros also had to be mischadish. We had to renew it at Erev Pesach, before Pesach. And it also required the same process. So I had to do that as well with the neighbor. It's called the putting the Erev Chatzeiros box down on the floor, taking a few steps back, having the other person being Zoch on it for all of the people in Bergen County. So again, we have to improvise, and that's lessons that we all learned and continue to learn during the crisis, during life, that we have to be creative and improvise. Anyway, that was just a sideshow. That's not part of our main part of our shiur. There is one other issue that gets a little bit complicated when you have Yontif going into Shabbos, and that's the issue of Hadlokas Neiros, of lighting candles. Here, people have to be very, very careful, particular with this man of Hadlokas Neiros, because sometimes when we think in terms of Yontif, so we have a little bit of a more relaxed attitude towards the timing of Yontif candles. So, truth to be told, it's probably not correct even on a regular Yontif. The Yontif candles are really supposed to be lit at the time of Lech Benchi, the time of Lokas Neiros, which in our communities is generally in America is pretty much about 18 minutes or so before sunset. You know, in Yerushalayim, the thing is 40 minutes before sunset. Other places have different customs, but in our communities, we generally write lighting candles at 18 minutes before sunset. On a regular Erev Shabbos, if a person was a minute or two late, that's okay. You know, the 18 minutes are a little bit of a buffer. If a person's a little bit more than a few minutes late, it's probably also still okay. How far into those 18 minutes can you get? So you have to speak to your Rav. I mean, under no circumstances get anywhere near the time of sunset on a regular Friday, because the sunsets are not absolutely exact, even to the calendar. And believe it or not, even the sunset itself changes slightly due to temperature and barometric pressure of any given day. So even according, if you have the most up-to-date the naval observation times of sunset, it still may be off by a couple of seconds. So therefore, under no circumstances should a person be lighting candles on the buzzer on any given Erev Shabbos. So one should give themselves plenty of time beforehand. So the 18 minutes are given as a buffer zone. Just as an aside, there is no 18 minutes after sunset. I remember once seeing a person getting out of the car about 10 minutes or so after sunset, and they noticed that a puzzled look on my face. And they said to me, don't worry, Rabbi, I'm still with them to 18 minutes. So the answer is, no, you're not. I didn't say that. But you're not with me. You're actually out of the 18 minutes. It means you're already into a Safek Chilul Shabbos Deraisa. So one has to be very, very careful about that. So obviously, we always time lighting Shabbos candles well before sunset. When it comes to Yontif candles on a regular Yontif, so one should also try to light before or at the correct time. But if for whatever reason one didn't, if one got delayed and something happened, and now it's already after the Zman on Yontif, technically one is allowed to light a candle on Yontif. One is not allowed to strike a match on Yontif, or one is not allowed to turn on a burner on Yontif, because our stoves have electric igniters to them, so not, unlike the stoves of old. So therefore, in today's world, for about probably 99% of us, you're not allowed to turn on a stove on Yontif, you're not allowed to strike a match on Yontif, but you can light from a pre-existing flame. So if you happen to have a pre-existing flame, so then that would be permissible technically even after the Zman. But again, that's not the correct way to light Yontif candles. When you have 2 days of Yontif not going into Shabbos, then it is obvious you cannot light candles earlier than Sunday. You have to wait actually till after dark. So the mindset of lighting Yontif candles is a little bit different than Shabbos candles. Shabbos candles are absolutely under no circumstances past, you know, anywhere near Shkia. Yontif candles is a little bit of a leeway, and second night Yontif, there's a significant, obviously, way after dark. When you have the Yontif going to a Shabbos, people get very, very confused. Is it Yontif? Is it Shabbos? Is it hin and a hair? So the least of the problems is your Shechiyona. Most of the problems is getting the wrong timing. So when you have a Yontif going to Shabbos, you must light the Yontif candles, or the Yontif / Shabbos candles, at the correct time, namely, preferably 18 minutes before Shkia, whatever the Zman of Lokos Neiros is. Those who want to make an early second night Yontif this year, because it's going into Shabbos, there is a special leeway in terms of doing that. As our Torah, we will send out as our Yetz Hashem by tomorrow or latest the next day, our quote unquote weekly announcements, just giving a little bit of guidelines in terms of that. But those who want to make an early Shabbos / Second Night Yontif would be permissible under these unique circumstances. It will, and in a certain sense, will be a little bit easier to maneuver for some people, unfortunately, because for obvious reasons, we still have not quite yet started our minyanim, so Shavuos will still be on the no minyan schedule. So there will be a certain almost ability to maneuver a little bit easier than if one is tied down to the minyan schedule. Again, I will elaborate for the Torah people, you know, later on in email, hopefully the next day or two. But if one decides to light Yontif candles early, so then one has to be careful not to light them too early. Because like any other Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif, if you begin Shabbos and Yontif early, so you have to be careful not to light before what's called Plag and Mincha. But again, we will elaborate upon that. So again, it gets confusing because when people start to think I can't go too early, I can't go too late, so people start to stress what to do, we will hopefully guide you properly in terms of the timing. But again, those are the factors that we're trying to walk through here. And if you take a look at the... I skipped by mistake the fourth of the sources. The fourth of the sources, what said is what we mentioned before, that preferably we do it with bread and a cooked dish, but if you only had a cooked dish, that would technically be okay. That would get in summer. We spoke about that outside. If you take a look, however, the fifth of the sources, there's another thing to keep in mind. Ne'er shel batola. The ha'inush eno tzorach lo osa lalikam. That one is not permitted on Yontif to light a candle which serves no function, which serves no purpose. That generally on Yontif, one is allowed to do certain things if there is a purpose to them. So let's say, for example, carrying, even though they're, let's say if you have an Erev, then that's significantly less of a problem. But if you're going in an area outside the Erev, it is not a free-for-all to carry anything and everything on Yontif. You're only allowed to carry those things that you may need. So you would be permitted, let's say, to go out of the Erev and carry tissues. You would be permitted to carry a siddur, to carry a lulav and sukkah, a shofar and shoshan, etc. Push a baby carriage, all those kinds of things are permissible on Yontif, even outside of the Erev. And similarly for lighting candles, so even if you're not lighting from scratch, light from scratch is always prohibited, but even if you're just simply extending a pre-existing flame, so it has to be done for some kind of a need for Yontif. Need for Yontif would be, I need the fire to cook with, I need the fire to read by, for example, a person wants the old days to heat up the house if it's cold. If a person needs a flame for anything, that's a tzorach, that's okay. But if there's no need whatsoever, that's a problem. What would be an example of a no-need flame? Why am I lighting it if there's no need? So sometimes you have situations where there's a quote-unquote need, but the need may not be an absolute legitimate halachic need. And this is a question I think we may have spoken about in a previous this year with the women, if I'm not mistaken. This is an age-old question about the lighting of Yahrzeit candles on Yom Tov. Many people like to light Yahrzeit candles. Many have the custom of lighting Yahrzeit candles whenever they say Yizkor. And since the second day of Yom Tov is Yizkor, the question is it permissible to simply light that candle on the second day of Yom Tov? Now, obviously, this year, that would not be an option. You kind of light the candle on Friday night. That's clearly out of the question. Should you light a Yahrzeit candle Friday afternoon? So that's a big, big question, because it is not clear whether the lighting of a Yahrzeit candle really constitutes a sufficient halachic need. The lighting of a Yahrzeit candle is a custom. It's not even necessarily a universal custom. It's not absolutely grounded in halachic background. It is customary. It should be observed. But to permit lighting of a Yahrzeit candle on Yom Tov per se is highly questionable. There are some who do permit it, others who don't. So therefore, what I recommend is that a person should try to light, both this year and any other time, that one should light the Yahrzeit candles before Yom Tov begins. So one should try to be careful to light, let's say, and this year, to try to light the Yahrzeit candles Thursday afternoon. When one bench is left on Thursday afternoon, those who are lighting Yahrzeit candles should try to light them Thursday. So you may be wondering that if a person lights it on Thursday, it's going to be out before Yizkor comes along. Correct. If you light a 24-hour Yahrzeit candle, that is correct. So if you really feel that you want to have that Yahrzeit candle going into Yizkor, again, this is not a halachic issue. This is a customary / emotional, whatever you want to call it. But if you really want to have that Yahrzeit candle going, so the simple solution is to buy a two-day Yahrzeit candle. And I would strongly recommend anyway to buy a two-day Yahrzeit candle. I use one in every Yom Tov. I use a two-day Yahrzeit candle, or on a three-day Yahrzeit candle, for a very simple reason. Because if you use a one-day Yahrzeit candle, that candle will very likely go out before the next night, and you're going to be in a pickle to light candles unless you have a stove. And not everyone keeps on a flame on Yom Tov. So it's always a good idea to have a candle available, obviously set up in a very, very safe way, it goes without saying. But it's probably not a bad idea to always have that Yahrzeit candle going for Yom Tovim, regardless, irrelevant to whether one is saying yes or not. For sure, this year, those who want to have Yahrzeit candle going throughout the duration of Shabbos should simply just purchase the two-day candles in advance. Again, this practice is to avoid any issues of Ner Shel Batala. So again, we obviously didn't touch on all aspects of Luchos Yom Tov. We tried to isolate a couple of important points, that things that do come up, and what we try to do a little bit is to show the background, show that these are not just a list of assorted, halachas that don't really fit into a pattern, don't really make any sense, don't have any background or meaning to them. This is part of a halachic progression. We learned sugyas that began with psukim. We learned through the eyes of the Rambam. We saw the Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch. We've just traveled 3,000 years plus of Jewish history, as we do all the time, whenever we learn, whenever we practice Torah and mitzvahs. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai, of course, is what ultimately we're celebrating in Mitzvah Shem at the end of this week. I just wanted to take just two or three minutes just to almost share a thought that I think is important all the time, and especially when we have this kind of situation of a Yom Tov leading into a Shabbos. Chazal tell us in Maseches Beitzah that one of the reasons why Chazal was so concerned to institute Erev Tashilin is that they were afraid of the following possible phenomena. On Yom Tov, it's a very special time. Shavuos happens once a year. So people get really, really psyched up and excited about it. Shabbos, every week. Now it happens to be in Chutz Laaretz. Shabbos for us happens to be the second day of Yom Tov. So this thought may not be as pertinent. But in Eretz Yisrael, for sure, it's true. And even for us, to a certain extent, it's true. So if you imagine for a moment, put yourself in the Eretz Yisrael mindset. So Yom Tov is Friday, and Shabbos is a regular Shabbos. Technically, halachically, in Eretz Yisrael, they're actually going to read Pashas Nasa. That's what's going to cause them to get a week ahead of us in Bris HaTorah. It's a little bit humorous to speak about being ahead of us in Bris HaTorah, considering the fact that we're about 15 weeks behind the Bris HaTorah, but that's another time and another place. How to hopefully solve that at the right time. We have the ability to do that sometime between now and some Torah. But technically speaking, it's a regular business as usual, regular Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. And we have this all the time. Whenever we have a two-day, a three-day Yom Tov, so Shabbos is in a sense on its own. And Chazal were very, very worried that a person may take the attitude that I ate a wonderful meal on Yom Tov, and I had a wonderful night on Yom Tov, a wonderful day on Yom Tov, and Shabbos is going to come, and you know what? I don't have to have a respectful Shabbos meal. And there's no need for me to make a beautiful, significant out of Shabbos, and this covet of Shabbos may actually suffer. And Chazal did not want that to happen in any shape or form. It is so critical that people have to be so, so careful. That Shabbos should be special. Shabbos should be special even when it's coming on the heels of the Yom Tov. You know, sometimes when we have a regular Shabbos, so 6 days a week, we're working. Wow, Baruch Hashem for Shabbos. And every once in a while, we have a Shabbos Chol HaMoed that came right smack in the middle. I have 2 days of Yom Tov, 2 days going, another 2 days of Yom Tov tomorrow, and I got Shabbos in the middle. There's almost like that unsaid feeling of maybe we can kind of do away without the Shabbos. And Chazal didn't want to give any credibility to that terrible mistaken approach. That we're going to bend over backwards to make sure that your Shabbos meal is a Shabbos meal. We're going to let you cook on Yom Tov to Shabbos. And we're going to make you make an Erev Shilin. And we're going to make sure that Shabbos looks the way it does. So we had a fascinating insight just about 2-3 hours ago. I was taking a walk with my wife. And we're walking down the streets of a Bergen field. And we smelled a couple of barbecues. And my wife commented to me that, like, barbecues. It's Memorial Day today. And, you know, kind of in the back of our minds, yeah, I knew it was also Memorial Day today. But I was thinking to myself, no pun intended, Manishtana Memorial Zem is going to call Memorial Days. And the answer is very, very simple, that normally Memorial Day is an unbelievable thing to, I mean, obviously, and I don't mean this at all in a sacrilegious way whatsoever, of course, it has a very real meaning and an important national meaning, an important, you know, meaning of appreciation for the fallen heroes of our country, no question at all. But I shouldn't use Memorial Day maybe as a model. Maybe this would be better as a Labor Day speech. But again, the idea being, it's a day off for people. And, you know, people have been working hard and they have a long weekend and, you know, it's an extra day off. And the weekend is a lot of, you know, time for family togetherness and the barbecues are going. I said the reason why Memorial Day probably got lost in the shuffle is because for most of us, it's been a long weekend for the last 3 months almost. But the overwhelming majority of us have been not necessarily not working. Most of us have been working. You know, many of us working even significantly harder than we do under normal circumstances. But the regular mindset of the getting up early in the morning, going up to work, the travel, the stress, etc. We've been replaced with many other stresses, unfortunately. But the idea I'm trying to suggest is that there's always been our regular routines, our work schedules have been so interrupted that it's almost hard to tell what is a holiday and what's not a holiday. It's kind of hard to tell that today is, this Monday is any different than last Monday. Under regular circumstances, last Monday would have been a day back to work with traffic on the bridge, etc. And today would have been a day off for most people. So that whole model is broken down. And that's exactly what Chazal didn't want to happen when you have Shabbos and Yom Tov coming one next to another. Because Shabbos is so special, so holy, so unique, that it doesn't have to take second fiddle to anything, even to a Yom Tov as great as Shavuos. And I think that this is something, not in a negative sense, but in a very positive sense, that we can really take the Yom Tov season, which we're embarking upon, in a sense, the end of the Yom Tov season. Shavuos is ultimately the end, the grandiose, the grand finale of Pesach. So this entire Yom Tov season that we've been in, the Pesach, the Sfiras Omer, culminating with Zman Matan Derasenu, is something that ultimately tells us when we finish Shavuos, or we finish at least the first day of Shavuos, the first thing we do is go right into Shabbos. That because we appreciate the greatness of Kabbalah Torah, that is what sets the stage to raise the bar for our Shabbosos. Some of you may remember that very, very first Thursday night when we entered into the lockdown mode here in Bergen County and pretty much soon to be followed or around approximately the same time for pretty much the entire country. So I shared with you an insight how your children are going to remember this Shabbos. And then I was talking about one Shabbos. We're all kind of hoping and praying, maybe fooling ourselves that, well, it's going to be one Shabbos and kind of this whole thing will pass and we'll be back to normal, back in our shuls the following week. So I presented by saying that this is an unbelievable Shabbos opportunity, unique Shabbos, that you're going to be able to set the tone for the Shabbosos for your children. Your grandchildren will remember in 50 years from now what Shabbos meant and just how special and unique this particular Shabbos was. And, of course, it's been quite a few since then. And again, no, nobody knows. We're not Nevi'im. We have no idea what the future holds for us. But again, we hope and pray that at least in our limited sense. So we hope and pray that the Shabbos will be almost like an end of a certain kufa in the life of our community that we hope we never have to go back to again. We hope and pray that, you know, that doesn't happen. We don't know, but we just dive into that. And, you know, as things are not at all that our crisis is winding down, and it doesn't mean that any shape or form to let up our guard in any way, but that particular tkufa of closed shuls in their entirety, and no minyanim, and no dvarim shel kedusha, no kriyas Torah, so we hope and pray that's coming to an end this coming Shabbos, at least in our particular location. And as we almost like make a little bit of a, we hope, a siyum, so to speak, in lack of a better term, on this tkufa, maybe it's this last Shabbos, that the Shabbos, which happens to also coincide with Shavuos, that will give us that extra push, an extra special meaning, and to impress upon our children just how special Shabbos is. So next Shabbos will have its own challenges with it. And obviously the embarking upon the unique way of davening in a minyan will have its own stresses and its own challenges. And hopefully we'll be able to overcome those with the prophecy of Shemai as well. But this Shabbos, the seventh day of Shavuos, maybe reiterate and relearn in a sense some of those messages we spoke about 11 plus weeks ago, about how you can teach your children what Shabbos is, and teach your children what Yom Tov is, and show them we can have Mikra Kodesh even if right now we don't have our shuls open. We can still have Mikra Kodesh. Spend the extra days learning with the children, encouraging your children to learn. Spend the extra days making sure that your children are davening properly in a Shabbos mode, in a Yom Tov mode, and make sure that all the sudos are, I'm sure the food will be delicious. Both the milchis of fleishis, whatever shape or form it is, I'm sure the food will be delicious. Make sure that the ruach of the sudos are to meet the criteria of Mikra Kodesh. And hopefully, Mitzvah Hashem, our children will remember. They'll remember many, many things about these past 11 weeks. And we hopefully pray that at some point down the line, they'll also remember the special message of Mikra Kodesh that all of you have the ability to add to. So I wish everybody a wonderful Yom Tov and a wonderful Shabbos and a Yom Tov to follow. And Mitzvah Hashem, we will hopefully have a chance to get back together in other Zoom shirim and other Zoom drashas, etc. So even though we may be going back to the tefillos, we hope and pray by next Shabbos, but obviously it's going to be in a very, very limited sense. So many of the other learning opportunities and drashas and shirim opportunities are still going to be on hold for the foreseeable future. So hopefully, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll try to be able to reconnect at the proper times. So wish everybody a wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov, a new Shabbos to go, and everyone should be zochah together to Zman Matan Dorsim. Thank you.